every Catholic school district should be so lucky as to have a superintendent like Dr. Erin Barisano. I first met Erin when she was the assistant superintendent in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, before taking on her current role as the superintendent for the Diocese of Orange. And I was immediately struck by her professional competence. No surprise, Erin would be the 2018 recipient of the University Council of Educational Administration's Award for Excellence in Educational Leadership. But professional competence has never been the only thing that distinguishes Erin. What struck me most when I met her was her deep commitment to ongoing spiritual practice. It was my interview with Erin that nudged me in the direction of writing Chapter 12 in Redeeming Power about the importance of learning to honor Sabbath time. And this was not the only contribution Erin made to the book. As you'll hear in these highlights from our conversation, Erin was also the one who helped me to begin to think more deeply about different generational experiences of power and influence.
So, Erin, I'm thrilled to get the chance to talk with you. When I first became a professor, like all of a sudden it became clear to me that from the other person's point of view, I was not David in this story. Yeah. I was kind of the giant. And I didn't know if you've had an experience like that also in your life, where all of a sudden you woke up to the fact, oh, things have changed.
Yeah. I think just coming into the superintendent's role and very early on, and people look to you, you're in a position of authority and look to you for answers. And it, you know, you're kind of looking around, and I remember, you know, kind of sitting around with the leadership team at the diocese and being the new face, and with bishops and with priests and with other directors, and that feeling of, when are they going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing, right? When is like the curtain going to be pulled away and they realize, oh, she doesn't know, and that kind of imposter syndrome.
And how long did it take you as superintendent before you figured out, oh, they don't know what they're doing either?
Oh, I know. And I was just talking, we had our new principals in yesterday. We have six new principals. One of them said that. She said, do you ever feel like you just, you're not doing enough? You're not doing enough for that parent, for that student, for that teacher. And I just, you know, I want to do, you know, the right thing. And I don't have enough resources, or I don't know enough. And I'm sitting in the back, you know, she's talking to her colleagues, and I raised my hand and I said, yes, that's called leadership. And particularly for us who are mission focused, we're here to serve others, and we never feel like it's enough. We never, and you know, and I told that story about kind of feeling like a fraud, like, when are they going to figure this out? And I said, yeah,
totally. So we've been talking even just in this question around, you know, about the experience, like all of a sudden I recognize I have power or whatever. When I say the word power, like when you woke up to the fact you have power, what do you hear when you hear that word being spoken? Like, what's your operating definition?
Yeah, it's funny to me. That's personally, it has a negative connotation. Like, I think of it as very authoritative and kind of, you know, banging the fist on the table power. I don't see, even now, don't see myself in a position of power. And so I love that you have also framed it as this influence.
Yeah. Like when I say the word a person of influence, how does that land differently?
For me, influence is certainly a more, a term where it's a softer term than power, but also it's inviting people. It's inviting people to follow you along and influencing them, having an impact on what you do. But it is, it's that invitation. Here, come with me. And I think that that's just more, you know, I mean, again, through that lens of faith, right? That's the servant leadership of Jesus.
And what are some tools you have at your disposal to be able to influence? Like, why would somebody come along with you? What makes
I think, again, at the diocesan level and as the superintendent, the person with power, with authority, is the bishop. And he has kind of given me that. I mean, it's been gifted to me, if you will, or, you know, designated to me. And so I think that there's a little bit of credibility just in that. But now, again, 5 years in, I think that that I've gained some street cred, and we've had some successes here. But it's, again, building that trust, building trust. Absolutely. Trust is a huge part of it. Humility, mercy, you know, leading with love and mercy and compassion and authenticity. I think that all of those things, you are who you say you are, and you, you know, your actions match your words. And so I think all of that comes through, and that lends itself then to being a person of influence.
You know, it's funny as you say that, because I have in some of the interviews, I've gotten to talk with some people of a younger generation than you and I, and especially people whose main ministry is like leading on social media. Mm-hmm. And I've asked them, how do you hear the word influence? And they'll say like, oh, influence. Oh, that's manipulative, shallow.
Oh,
and I said, well, what if I said you're a person of power? And they're like, yeah, that'd be okay. Like, that doesn't sound bad. And I thought, oh, I think there's something that might be slightly generational here.
Yeah.
Language. But everybody who I've asked, Aaron, and I'm guessing you and I are pretty close to some.
Yeah, we are.
Everybody I've asked of our generation has great hesitancy around the language of power.
Interesting.
And I don't know why that is exactly. Huh. Like, do you have an intuition about like what makes you nervous around hearing, oh, she's got a lot of power?
That's super interesting, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Somebody said to me once, they're like, I think most of the interactions that we've seen of people with power is that over and over again, people of power or have been labeled as powerful have let us down.
Yeah.
In our generation.
In our generation. Mm-hmm. I think there is something to that. Yeah.
What kind of, knowing that we do have so much hesitancy around, I think we have a fear of abusing power.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, yeah. I think what sometimes what I hear the younger generation calling us to right now is like, you're not using your power, and that you haven't spoken up when you should speak up. And it's like, I think oftentimes we're stuck in kind of this, we know that health lies somewhere in between, like somewhere in the in-between space between like, I don't want to overstep my power and I don't want to not use what I should be doing. How do you stay in that healthy space? Like, maybe there's scripture passages or saints that you think of as models or mentors you've had in your own life, or, you know, just concepts that you learned from your ED work. Like, what keeps you in that, in a healthy, moderate
space? Yeah. Yeah. I think commitment to mission, I think is huge. And it's taken me time in my own leadership journey to recognize that and to really, really identify as a mission-focused leader that everything that we do has got to be centered on mission. And how is this decision furthering our mission? How does this communication further our mission? This is not my vision. This is not my work. This is God's work. I'm merely his instrument. He has called me to do this work. I won't be here forever doing this work. I will know when it's time to move on and somebody else will be called. And I just trust in that. I truly believe that. And I think when you can just allow the Spirit to work through you, that's when the good stuff happens.
I remember that. I mean, what you're saying resonates with me of the experience I have of you as someone humble and pure of heart. And what also has struck me about you, and I think about this with Beatitudes, is a little bit the joy aspect of it. Because a lot of people who are in very weighty positions, as yours is, can describe like the weight, like just the burden of it.
Uh-huh.
I remember talking to you even in the midst of COVID, and you're like, some really good things are happening. Like, Spirit is working through here. And I thought, no one else is telling me that, right? But Aaron is telling me that. when have you experienced like in your role, like that the Spirit was at work, you were part of something way bigger than yourself?
Oh, every day. I mean, every day. And I find myself in a position now where, I'm not the young one around the table, as it kind of started out. Even in longevity of my role, I'm 5 years in now, and, everybody else in a leadership role at the diocese has changed. I'm the veteran.
Oh my God.
That is so, so interesting to me. But we have, this kind of vision of Catholic education in our diocese, of this vision of growth and animated by the Spirit. And everybody that I talk to is like, can you feel the Spirit? Can you feel the Spirit? So it's really, it is like an everyday thing. And yes, thank you for recognizing that, the joy that comes with it. And again, things I've said publicly and privately, it is such a privilege for me to serve our church in this way at this time. I think it is such a crucial, crucial time. And if we don't, we can't do this. Yeah, we're mere mortals. We can't do this without being animated by the Spirit. And so, I feel so very strongly about that.
When you look in the vast range of like the Catholic tradition, all the saints that we've grown up with, maybe people you've known, or maybe people that you've read about in Butler's Lives, who do you think of as modeling someone who like the Spirit was just running, like they were fully animated by the Spirit and the exercise of power? Yeah. Do you have like a patron saint for yourself?
Not really. I mean, I don't, but I do love Ignatian spirituality. You know, when I was at LMU doing my doctorate work, and that's really when I got introduced to Ignatian spirituality and the connection of the Spirit just in my own life. So I do have a deep love and connection, and I feel that, and just again, allow. I think that, you know, I've always kind of looked at St. Ignatius as a model of that, of that, you know, being ignited by the Spirit.
Yeah. One of the other people who I've interviewed actually talked in a kind of similar way, is like, there's so much that's sticky that there's not clarity around, and that Ignatian spirituality helps with discernment and listening to the Spirit, like discerning where the Spirit's in there.
Uh-huh.
And that one of the gifts of the Spirit is kind of wisdom or prudence, you know.
Right.
Because it's not solid. It's not like we have an answer book to everything.
Right. And there's a lot of noise. I mean, it's noisy too. And so to kind of, discern that can be challenging. And that's why that kind of the time is so, so important. One of the practices, you know, spiritual practices that I've adopted is, one day a month. I tried to do it more, but it's been pretty consistently one day a month. I go to, we have a school there, St. Catherine's Academy, and it's a boarding school run by the Dominicans. It's amazing. It's been here for 130 years, and they have a little room for me, and it looks like a little hotel room. I mean, it has a bed and it has a bathroom, and it's right next to the chapel. And I go there and I pray, and I get just some quiet time. I read, I sit, they feed me very well. Sometimes I take a nap. There's beautiful grounds. I walk around, and that's my work for the day. And it is so grounding, and it's so important to renew our spirits. And I would never in a million years have thought that that was such an important part of leadership. And when I hear, you know, colleagues talk about just how busy they are and how long their days are, yes, yes, and yes. And we need to take time away to renew ourselves.
It has to take a lot of courage even to block your schedule off for that long.
Yes. I have a very persistent assistant. So she's so good. Yep.
Yeah. Who really holds that time for you?
Yeah, it's been so life-giving and so necessary. And yes, at the beginning, I felt kind of guilty and, well, you know, I need to be here, or I need to be seen, or I need to be at this meeting. And guess what? All that stuff is there when you get back.
Do you think that having been around the block several times now, that helps to actually increase your sense of hope? Because you begin to recognize like, yeah, this is part of a bigger picture. Like, it might not happen immediately, but eventually you've gotten to see a couple of things happen.
Yes. Totally. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's made me a much calmer leader. I will say that, definitely more patient, because it is part of a bigger picture and a bigger plan. So absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been interesting to me. There was somebody who I was interviewing who was in the hospital leadership field, and he was like, I was so furious about it. And the sisters that I worked with, like the nuns previous, they were like, yeah, we're upset about that too, but it's okay. Just, it'll be well. And he goes, I just recognized at the age of 85 or 95.
Yeah.
They did. They had a sense. And he goes, yeah, sure enough, about 5 years later, it did work itself out. But
yeah.
I wasn't thinking in terms of 5 year blocks, but they were thinking in terms of 5, 10, 15, sometimes 100 year blocks that they carry the bigger picture with them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's such wisdom in that. And certainly, you know, there are things to do at the immediate in the day to day, but yeah, that recognizing the bigger picture is liberating. I was going to say it's empowering. It's liberating.
Wow. How do you know? Cause I think this is one of the things that's come up as a challenge is like, I think some of us, as we're getting older, are getting more like, yeah, well, I can only change this. Like, and we've come to a certain, there's a beauty in our 50s, I would say, of a certain kind of acceptance of,
yeah,
well, this is the structure that I'm working for. If I don't, I could go elsewhere, but yep. I still like it enough, you know, or I find it rewarding enough or satisfying. And I think I can stay in it. Yeah, there's a lot of things I would love to see change or that I'd love to fix. May happen in my lifetime, might not. And I would say if I've heard anything from the younger generation, it's like, you've become too complacent or you've become too patient. You should be advocating more. There are things you should be using your power and your authority to actually change. And I'm wondering how you wrestle with that dynamic.
Yeah. I think that we need to pick and choose kind of where we want to have impact. And I think maybe that's the difference. And that's maybe that discerning spirit is you can't spend your energy changing everything or having impact everywhere. And that's just not, it's not effective. And so it is kind of figuring out what are those, you know, really big ticket items that this is where we're going to invest our energy to really influence change or to really impact change. And there are some, I mean, there's a lot of big ticket items and that's where, you know, and you chip away at it, chip away at it, chip away, chip away. I don't think that's complacency at all. I think even from a business perspective, I think that's super strategic. I mean, I just, you know, like that's strategy.
Yeah. What are some of the big ticket items that you would say, like this, I'm willing to spend some of my social capital on?
I think some of those cultural items that we're experiencing now, not only within our church, but outside our church, you know, the issues of race and privilege and equity that, you know, permeate our own church. That's a big ticket item that we've not addressed. And again, we're trying to, it's so big. That how can you be an agent of change and impact that? And so through the lens of our Catholic faith. So I really, that's one I feel really, really passionately about.
And what are some things that you try to do from your position to make some headway?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just some like really practical things on the very base level are resources for principals, for teachers, you know, speakers, kind of starting, but engaging in conversation for myself. I'm trying to form my own heart and my own kind of tool belt, if you will, so that I can then kind of discern what that means then to be a person of impact. I feel this great responsibility, again, going back to that idea of responsibility that that God has placed me in this position to do good and to make the need of change and to lead the way. And so so right now I think it's just small things, but I can feel it that it's gonna lead to bigger things.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, anngarrido.com. Go be the leader God called you to be in the world.